Hi everyone, welcome back to the Commercial Real Estate Library podcast. As you know, on this podcast, our goal is to connect you with the brightest minds in the commercial real estate industry, from CEOs of the world's largest pension funds to chief planners in the world's biggest and most exciting cities, like Toronto, like Vancouver, like Montreal, like Calgary. And today is no different. Our special guest today is Michael Hungerford. He is a partner at Hungerford Properties. They are one of the leading development investment companies in Western Canada. And of course, our West Coast host, Stephen Morissette, will be hosting this discussion. If you like Western Canada, this is an episode for you. Enjoy the episode and thanks for listening.
Welcome everyone to the Commercial Real Estate Library podcast. I'm Stephen Morissette, your West Coast host of the podcast. With me today is Michael Hungerford. Michael has been at the helm of Hungerford Properties for over 15 years, investing, managing, and developing properties across Western Canada. Prior to Hungerford Properties, he lived in China for 2 years, working in the real estate and technology fields. Michael is currently the Development Issues and Government Relations Co-Chair at NAIOP. Quite a mouthful. He has served on the board of directors of the Vancouver Heritage Foundation and on the board of BC Cancer Foundation. In 2009, Michael was named to Business in Vancouver's Top 40 Under 40, and he is currently a member of the Young Presidents Organization. He also had the honor of being the chair of the Vancouver Real Estate Forum in 2019. Michael holds a Bachelor of Political Science from Queen's University and an MBA from Stanford, and he lives in Vancouver and has 4 children. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Stefan. Good to be here.
Yeah, so first question is, you know, just getting to know you a little bit. It's quite a distinguished college that you went to at Stanford and then going over to China to work in the tech and real estate side. Can you talk a little bit about that experience and how that's kind of, you know, approached the business or affected it?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think as I think about my life and how fortunate I've been, there's a couple things. One thing is I would say in the real estate industry in general, what I always find fascinating is how we all get into the industry through different ways. And for me anyway, it's always an opportunity to learn from others because people bring so much perspective and skill into our work. So I'm always feeling like I'm learning every day.
Yeah.
In terms of like spending time in Asia and then down in California, I think there's sort of a 2 themes in my life that I can relate to. One is seeing the big picture, and you know, long-term macro trends is something that I've always placed my career and my capital on the path of a rising tide, so to speak, and I'll continue to do that. And the other one is really just being entrepreneurial and thinking about risk return and seeing opportunities in the market. You know, the growth of China, the growth of tech and entrepreneurship through Stanford, and then now real estate over the last, dozen years or so. It's really, that's been sort of the common thread through my life. And those experiences have really helped me keep a broadened perspective on things. I've got networks around the world, and I've applied that to my business here in Western Canada. Both from a capital raising standpoint, looking at mentorship and companies that I like to emulate, investment strategies, et cetera. I'm always thinking about stuff that's happening outside of our local market.
So with that, like with China, what are your thoughts today on how things are given, you know, obviously the pandemic as well as maybe tension with relations with China? Not to get too political, but what are your thoughts on that and how is that maybe affecting our local market, do you think?
Well, I mean, Canada is a country of immigration, obviously, and diversity is our strength, as we hear, and we believe in that, and I personally believe in that. We're a more and more interconnected world, of course, so, you know, it's just incredible with COVID to see how something in a wet market in Wuhan can spread and become, sure. You know, it's just incredible how something seemingly small and innocuous can create a global situation. I think that's the world of the future. And so, you know, being more attuned to what's happening around the world to the extent you can filter out a lot of noise in media, which is a whole other topic for another time. But, you know, trying to see the world as a very small place, I think is a perspective that one can benefit from.
I would agree. That's good insight. For the listeners who aren't aware who the Hungerford Property Group is, you know, obviously you've got a unique background, which we touched on. Your brother, Andrew, who's your partner, has investment experience in, I believe, London and New York. I think your father started out as a lawyer. So, you know, those are some pretty unique backgrounds coming into a Vancouver real estate market. How do you think that's shaped your organization and your strategy going forward?
Yeah, I think having those like diverse skill sets in the office with my two business partners is really invaluable to like look at the situation through a different lens. And I think that's definitely a strength for us. You know, we're when we think about our company and our culture and the values that we have, it's first of all, it's great to be in business with family because you sort of have that common value set already in place, and you can build on that as a strength. And it provides that kind of consistency and long-term kind of perspective on things, which, you know, I definitely am grateful for. In terms of our, like, you know, educational backgrounds and whatnot, yeah, real estate is such a multifaceted business, and the development process and investment management and all of that, really, you know, you really need to leverage those skills from different backgrounds. And so the three of us having such diverse background has really been a source of strength for us.
Fantastic. You know, from my experience, Hungerford's always looked for, you know, value add opportunities. I know you're doing a lot of new development as well. Given the turmoil in the marketplace, you know, we kind of touched on it before we started. Are you seeing many opportunities coming your way due to, you know, distressed assets or due to what's happening with COVID? Or do you think the market's as strong as ever? And what's your perspective overall on that, given COVID?
Yeah, well, it's a really diverse market, right? And we're you know, predominantly we've been investing in industrial, and we've spun off a business in the self-storage industry, which we can touch upon. It's sort of another part of sort of an entrepreneurial approach we take. We do a lot of multifamily as well. But the answer really depends on kind of what asset you're talking about and what market. And obviously the Prairies is very different from Vancouver, isolating that as well.
Right.
But, you know, taking a longer term perspective on things, this is a cycle, you know, we were at the top end of a cycle going into COVID, and COVID's accelerated a lot of trends, as we all know, that were already in place. But it is ultimately a health crisis, but it's accelerating other sort of weaknesses in the market. So when we look for sort of opportunities today at the early stage of a recovery, let's say, or the immediacy of a downturn, we're looking at stuff that's had high leverage, first of all. And I think that's an area of where you're really offside when your income goes down on properties. And our banking sector is very strong in Canada, but certainly groups that have high leverage that were already offside going into the crisis from a you know, loan to value standpoint, they're gonna be the first ones to experience some serious pain.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, understanding those opportunities, getting close to lenders, you know, workout groups, stuff like that, is obviously an area where you can first find opportunity. But value add's always a matter of perspective, and you know, one might see vacancy as an opportunity rather than a risk. You know, I'll give you an example. If we're repositioning a building from industrial to, say, you know, self-storage use, you know, vacancy in this market is actually a good thing for us. We've repositioned office assets into residential, and that's another area of opportunity. Some may say, well, it's an empty building, but actually you want the building empty if you're going to reposition it. So it really comes down to, you know, what's your value add, and ultimately, as asset builders and something that we're passionate about and we really enjoy, whenever there's volatility in the market, there's going to be opportunity, and that's kind of what gets us excited at the end of the day.
For sure, yeah. And I guess you've also been active on the land acquisition side, or bare land, as well as development. Talking about a couple of your bigger deals of late, one that Colliers was involved in South Vancouver, the Walmart site, which is 12 and a half acres right off Marine Drive, right near Main and Fraser, between Main and Fraser there. Can you talk a bit about that deal and what the latest is there, what's happening, and what the strategy is?
Sure, yeah. I mean, that was a great buy for us. South Van is sort of a sleepier part of the Vancouver market, and with such tight land constraints on industrial, it's pretty rare to find such a large size parcel. Yeah. It's very centrally located. I mean, the ideal use for that site is sort of e-commerce last mile fulfillment, or a film studio, or something that's just really high in employment, high in density as well. And so that's kind of where we've been focusing our efforts on, looking at multi-story and higher dense forms of industrial, working with the City of Vancouver on how they can support that form of development in Vancouver. And that's where we sit today. So we haven't announced anything, but we certainly have had good, meaningful conversations. We do have a lead development that we'll be announcing early next year on the site.
Very cool.
And we're also, as a sort of a plan B, call it a strategy, we've looked at breaking up the site into smaller parcels. We're putting in an all turns intersection and a new public street to be able to subdivide and create more flexibility for eventual redevelopment. So while we might not end up breaking the site up in terms of ownership, at least we have the flexibility and optionality to kind of, you know, find smaller uses than one big user.
Yeah, I think it's a great site, and I think it's a definitely an up and coming location for sure. And the multi-story thing is pretty interesting. I've chatted both with, with West Group, who's doing that out in Coquitlam, and obviously Oxford and South Vancouver on a bigger scale of a 700,000 square foot two-story development. But definitely think that that's kind of the wave of the future, especially in the core markets where you're closer into the city. So hoping to see more of that, efficient multi-story development going forward. Switching out to quite a bit further out market of Abbotsford, one of your larger land transactions, 160 acres, partnered with Quadreal right off Highway 1. What are your thoughts on the Abbotsford industrial market? Maybe touch on partnership deals with, groups like Quadreal and the strategy there.
Yeah, first on partnership, I think, being entrepreneurial and looking for complementary fits in terms of other organizations. Quadreal has really been an ideal partner for us. We've partnered with them on the project. We've also partnered with them on a mixed use industrial intensification project near downtown Vancouver, right at a transit station. Maybe we touch on that later. It's a very interesting project.
Sure.
We're doing multi-story industrial, residential rental, as well as office, all in one building. The Abbotsford market is, the Fraser Valley is a huge growth area for the Lower Mainland, obviously, with population, affordable living. It's really where the jobs are moving further, the working class jobs are moving further east. Abbotsford has an international airport. It's close to the U.S. border. It's right off Highway 1. So from a transportation standpoint, it's just as competitive as some industrial parks like Campbell Heights or Gloucester, for example. So, we're starting to see value increases there in terms of land, lease rates, the condominium market. All of these things are for the industrial market are supporting development. And for us, we put the deal together from an acquisition standpoint. We brought in a great long-term pension fund backed partner like Quadreal. Together we're developing it, leasing it, and then Quadreal will own it long-term. So it's a really good fit, complementary fit in terms of organization and values, building a class A facility catering to sort of logistics, maybe a bit of manufacturing, but primarily logistics.
Yeah, I know. It's an interesting market. Before recent times, I had never even really been out to Abbotsford, just through it. But I recently sold two bays in Beattie's Mason project there from a client who moved from a core market out to there. And, you know, on a good day with not too much traffic, you can be out there in 40, 45 minutes, where Campbell Heights takes about the same amount of time. So I think that market's going to really do well. Beattie's pretty much sold out of their Mason project, and there's another one out there that's underway as well at values that are well north of where Delta used to be just a couple of years ago. So I think it was a great move to acquire out there.
Yeah, maybe, and both the NDP and the Liberal government in the election platform that we're running into here, they both have committed to expanding the Highway 1 there between Langley and Abbotsford, which is another good kind of story to support industrial development up there.
Yeah, I think I'll stay away from the politics right now, but maybe do you want to touch on the other Quad Rail project while we're talking Quad Rail? Because that sounds like it's an interesting and unique development. So,
yeah, we're just bringing it to market now. It's condominium, industrial, as well as condo office, stacking on top of each other. And then another tower for residential rental, which will be obviously leased up upon completion. It's called Archetype. And the name Archetype really comes from the form of and mix of use being somewhat new to the market, 6.5 FSR. So it's quite high density on what was an industrial piece of land. So we're really trying to envision what high dense mixed use industrial base looks like. The city of Vancouver has supported that zoning, and I think this is really going to be the archetype, if you will, for future high density mixed use industrial. So the ground floor is industrial, and that will kind of form the character of the site. And then the office and employment will be there. And then you've got a residential tower. So it's really interesting the way we've separated the uses out, and we're utilizing a full block of land. So it's there's a website on it, and I'd encourage you guys to check it out.
Very cool, very cool. Another interesting and pioneering type of use that you guys have developed is the Trove project out in Richmond. I specialize in industrial enrichment, and I remember, you know, you guys and Blake calling me touching on that, and I thought it was quite unique and interesting, right next to an auto mall, basically building high-end garages for people who own premium vehicles. Do you want to touch a bit on that, unique project and brand?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess the thesis here was Vancouver has the highest per capita luxury supercar market in North America. Storage garages are not new. We've seen them in the U.S. in particular. So about 4 years ago, before we bought the land, we were intrigued by the idea of creating a community for auto enthusiasts, and really creating that marketing story around what is essentially a two-level industrial condo building. Rather than creating a vanilla product and where you have end users that are very different uses, we said, well, let's bring around auto, cater to the car collector, invite in some auto businesses as well to provide service to the collectors as well as the neighborhood, and then we'll get something bigger than the sum will be greater than each of the parts, and that's what's happened. We've been able to charge great rates both on a condo sale value as well as the lease rates we're getting there, and It's a lot of fun. So if you go to Trove Club on Instagram, I would encourage you to check it out. It's very active. We've got all the high-end dealers using the space right now. And then the collectors are starting to build out their units and create these pretty spectacular places for storing their vehicles and wine rooms and bars and lounges and all that stuff. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, what we heard from these collectors was having to park their cars in downtown office buildings and parkades or in industrial parks where they're next to some, you know, a poultry processing plant or something. And it wasn't the lifestyle, wasn't supporting their lifestyle. So by packaging up this kind of community, we're able to charge more, provide a really nice experience for for that lifestyle. It's a very niche project. It's not something you can easily replicate. But because it's across from an auto mall, it's in a very affluent part of the Lower Mainland in Richmond. There's a lot of Chinese immigrant owners that own supercars. I mean, it works really well and has done very well.
Yeah, it's very, very neat and unique. You know, something else that you guys are diversified in is the self-storage business with your Pocket brand. I know that's also a more recent venture. Do you want to talk a little bit about Pocket and where that's headed and the strategy?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we like self-storage. If you look back at 2008-09 and the crisis and the storage REITs and how they performed in the U.S., that really formed the basis of our thesis when we're looking at long-term trends and resilient real estate. We liked what happened then, and we're seeing it now in terms of COVID, and the delinquency rates are very low on storage. You know, the long-term trends on multifamily living and affordability. People have still consumption, but they don't have places to store it, their goods. So storage, you know, is an asset class we like a lot. It's also very complementary to our skill and experience in industrial. You're able to get more density on industrial land using storage. Storage can fit into different uses actually quite well. You know, it can take up those sort of more difficult parts of amassing of a building. And so it's, whether we're doing it on our own, we're also looking to partner with groups. We've got, the first thing we did is we went out and recruited one of the top operators in the country to be our head of operations and our president of the brand. And then we're backstopping that management platform with all our real estate expertise to be able to build and find opportunities and finance them and manage the assets. So it's just a great team that we've put together, and we're just at the sort of start of our growth. We've got about 8 facilities, and we're looking to grow quite quickly.
Well, that's great. You know, I'd be remiss if we didn't touch a little bit on Alberta. I know you guys are quite active there as well. Obviously, it's been hit a little bit, to say the least, with respect to oil and then COVID. You know, how are you seeing things on either the residential or commercial side over there? And, you know, do you think there's opportunities going forward?
Yeah, I mean, Alberta's definitely grayed my hair out a little bit. It's been a tough 6.5 years now since the end of 2014 when the market took a turn. We've been investing in Alberta since 2012. Our initial projects did very well. And then it's just been about a lot of hard work the last 6.5 years, where much like with COVID that we're seeing now, you know, when you're in a down market, you certainly learn a lot about, you know, the fundamentals of real estate, the importance of moderate leverage, back to basics of tenant relationships, working hard on every deal, managing cash flows, expenses. All of that stuff is just so, you know, it's what's playing out in COVID now, but in Alberta, we've been dealing with it for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So it's a good learning ground for our team. You know, we've been more in the industrial market there, which has been the top performing market. And there's I think a very positive story long term for regional logistics for Western Canada out of Alberta because of affordable reasons and availability of land, et cetera. It's also got a strong ESG story in terms of the oil sector, which, you know, depending on your views on oil, is definitely going to position Western Canada well for energy right. markets globally. But, you know, our view on Alberta is it's kind of where we have some family roots as well as here in Vancouver. We're in it for the long term. We like industrial the most, and we'll continue to invest there. But it's not for the faint at heart. But there's some great value opportunities there right now. There's great yield for quality assets. I think for a diversified portfolio in Canada, where there's a good population growth story there and a long-term right. diversification story. I think for long-term capital, Alberta is a great buy right now.
Good. On more of a, I guess, macro scale and then drilling down to BC and the West Coast, you know, where do you see the economy heading in the next, let's say, 12 to 18 months? obviously, given what's happening with COVID, but we seem to be pretty resilient here in Vancouver and BC. You know, what's your crystal ball prediction for the next year to 2 years?
Yeah, I think, accelerated trends that were already in place, more or less for us, hasn't really been a change in the assets that we like. We'll continue to invest in industrial and multifamily predominantly, more rental than condo on the resi side, less strata on industrial, more for lease, more self-storage all around, like that. More intensity of land use, a lot of value add in zoning work and working with municipalities. That's such an important part of our business here. It's a bit of black, if you will, we're navigating through zoning and it takes so long here. It's really a tough business to be in.
Yeah.
You have to be really resilient in the best of times. So it's, we can't control COVID necessarily, the timing of it or the U.S. elections or the tax regime that's going to be placed on us at any point in time with, how we're going to pay for all of this stuff. But, real estate's a long-term game and, we'll just continue to do our best and make continuation bets in the sectors that we like. And that goes for, 12 months, 18 months, I'll probably be saying the same thing in years from now.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. Couple rapid fire questions for you that I just want to ask you that are more on a personal scale. What is one book that has most greatly influenced your life, a book or a film, I guess?
Well, recently I read a great book called Younger Next Year, I'm 48. But it's a book I would encourage anyone in their kind of 40s, even up to, any age to read. And it was given to me by a mentor of mine. And it really emphasized for me the importance of balance and exercise and diet and all the things that can help you through your career and life challenges that are, are going to happen. That book really changed my exercise regime and my diet and a whole bunch of things that I've really taken into this COVID lockdown and just never felt better personally than I have in the last few months, which is one of the silver linings out of COVID.
Well, it's great. I'll check that one out. How has a failure or apparent failure set you up for later success? Do you have a favorite failure of yours? It's a tough question for some people, but...
I mean, every project is full of failure. I would say every week for sure there's a failure that I see happening. It's just the nature of our industry and the investments we make are over a long period of time, and every single deal, even the ones that are extremely profitable at workout in the end, they've all had setbacks. And so it's just it's an absolute fact of life. And everything that we do, it's really about learning. How do you learn from those and find the learning opportunities? And it's about mitigating risk. So, one of the things, because we're institutionally backed, primarily, we're really focused on diligence and process and risk management. And so, as far as, lessons learned goes over the long run, things like moderate leverage not putting debt on land. Those sorts of things are things you have to remember in the good times when it's very competitive and there's people bidding up value, and you have to have that discipline to walk away. Sometimes mm-hmm. saying no to a deal or a decision is the right decision, and something to be celebrated, those successes. When you feel like you're maybe losing out on something, you're actually winning, because these things play out over years and markets can change on you.
That's great, thank you. final question, what advice would you give a young, driven, smart individual coming out of college or university, or what advice would you give your younger self coming into real estate?
Yeah, I mean, so much. Talk to lots of people. You know, take a long-term view. When you're young, invest in yourself. You know, do courses. You know, read books, focus on some hard skills. It's harder to do that later in your career. Focus on relationships. Relationships are so important. So the networking and the FaceTime and the Zoom time or whatever you can get in front of people, yeah. You know, be curious. And that's just such an important part of the business. Can't stress enough. And think, try to understand your own values and align yourself with people, businesses that have similar values, because you know, when you're all pulling in the boat together, it's a great feeling when you've got that rhythm and you're working in a team together and you're thinking alike and you have similar values, so it's you know, you can spend some time investing in yourself about, you know, who you are. What are your strengths? And just be more self-aware. I think when you're younger, that can help you find the right fit in an organization or in a business that you're in with the people you work with.
I think that's fantastic advice. Reminds me a bit of the book Principles by Ray Dalio to plug a book that's changed my game a little bit. I don't know if you checked it out, but also recommend that one. But talks a lot about aligning values and understanding strengths and how they all fit together. But with that, thank you so much for your time. That was very insightful, a lot of value to myself as well as hopefully our audience, and I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Stefan. Good to see you.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Hey there. Thanks so much for listening. This is the end of the podcast. I really do want to say thank you, Garrett, myself, Sean, Preya, Stefan. We've been growing this podcast for the last couple years, and it's fantastic to see the response that some of these episodes are getting. So again, just really thank you. It's fantastic to see the impact, and we do appreciate it. If you liked the episode, if you got some value from it, please remember to rate, comment, subscribe. The best thing that you could do would be to comment and let us know who you want to hear from next. Some of our favorite podcast episodes, some of the best ones that we've ever done, have been a suggestion from somebody in the audience or one of my colleagues saying you should interview so-and-so. And we go out, we reach out to that person and put them on the podcast. So let us know who you want to hear from, and we'll try and get them on. Have an amazing day.